afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. You'll see the many things we talk about over there, like third-party voting. Evan McMullen has captured my attention. I think getting a lot of attention now. Glenn Beck talking about him, which is good if Beck can get behind, because Beck being a fellow Mormon and also a pretty influential individual when you consider all the many things that he's been able to rally and pull together and push. If McMullen happens to get that endorsement officially, could be pretty darn interesting. Father Thomas Loya with us this afternoon. We're going to talk about Pam Anderson and her crusade against porn. Then a little bit later on in the show, we will be talking about Archbishop Tobin's elevation. That is Archbishop Tobin of Indianapolis, his elevation to cardinal. And then the interesting, as I see it, interesting parallel between Archbishop Tobin and Mike Pence, who is now, of course, on the national playing stage as the running mate to Donald Trump, especially when those guys have a history together. We'll get into that a little bit later on as well. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
If you enjoy listening to the Leo Brown Almost Hour, consider becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you. You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. I posted this over my Facebook page. Got a lot of response out of it. This James O'Keefe, I guess, is the mastermind behind this movement. O'Keefe has been criticized, kind of like David DeLayden, in the sense of maybe dubious means to try to get his stories out. And there are those who would even accuse him of clever editing or manipulating the subjects to the point of telling the narrative, presenting the narrative that he wants. And in my opinion, and you don't have to agree with this, I just believe this is where I delineate, this is where I differentiate. And if you're going to do that, like Delighton, like Lila Rose, like any of these who are out there, don't call it journalism. That's all I ask. Just don't call it journalism. As long as you're doing that, I think that we're okay, right? You wouldn't, and this is a pale comparison, but I'll give you what just immediately came to mind. You wouldn't, as a home cook, have friends over for a meal and call yourself a chef. You just wouldn't, right? Chefs have a degree of education, a discipline within what they've done. They've learned the craft. They've risen in the ranks. You don't call yourself a chef. You're a cook. You might be darn good, but there's something about the way you do things that are different than those who have a different discipline. For instance, and it's just an example, you may not necessarily concern yourself with cross-contamination in the kitchen just because you've never been trained in that. You just do things a certain way. You may cut the chicken on the same cutting board as you cut the vegetables, which you would never do in a restaurant without this being properly sanitized. You're just not going to. You may skip that step as a home cook because you're like, oh, you know what? That's all going to go into the same dish anyway. Right? You may think that. But chefs do things a very particular way because of their training, their discipline, their experience. So I hope that, I know it's a pale comparison, but it's the first thing I thought of, and it just seems to be a way of explaining this, because you see these things a lot where it's this undercover investigation. Oh, we're investigative journalists. No, you're not. You're an activist. just admitted you're an activist, which I think these guys, by the way, who O'Keefe's organization, from what I gather, they've caught enough flack that they don't try to present themselves as activists anymore. Excuse me, as journalists, they present themselves as activists. And activists make documentaries. They do things that look very similar to journalism, but it's all with a degree of manipulation because they're going to filter out what they want. So, what am I trying to say here? What's the word I'm looking for? So solidly, that's not the word. It's so saturated. It's going to be such a saturated filter that you're only going to get that which is going to be what you have to make a decision on. So if that makes any sense, which, by the way, most of the mainstream media, while I agree there's some degree of bias, you're not going to see that, which I don't watch MSNBC. I don't watch, honestly, I don't watch anything. I really do not watch news. You could give me the name of just about any newscaster out there who's on TV, with exception to maybe three, I would know who you're talking about. Otherwise, I have no clue. I haven't watched news in years upon years. But it was suggested, Mike Allen said, hey, you should see this Ben Carson interview with Joe Scarborough, I think is his name, of Morning Joe on MSNBC. I had never seen this program before, but I found it interesting because I hear a lot about, oh, MSNBC, oh, they're so liberal. And I'm watching this guy. He's talking about being a Republican, and he's talking about his party being hijacked. And I thought, really? This is the liberal? This is... That's the guy. So I didn't see that. But anyway, I think we see what we want to see. But in all of this, realization apparently now that this undercover story has exposed is the interesting practice of making intentionally making a scene at these Trump rallies that we saw time and time again, even the Chicago rally getting shut down. Their goal was to do that because they were going to create such a challenge on the outside of this event that they wouldn't even be able to get in, and there would be fear of it even happening. That was their goal. And they're funded, they're paid, they pay other people. And all of these stories, one story after the other, of how this works and the manipulation that takes place. And the entire time I watched this, which, by the way, it's at my Facebook page if you want to see it, and it's, I think, about 14 minutes of entirety, it's worth watching. I'm just thinking, these guys couldn't be the only ones, right? The Democrats, the liberals, this can't be exclusive to them, because everybody plays the same political games. You can't tell me, there's not a conservative-leaning organization out there that's doing something manipulatively to give liberals a bad name. Cannot tell me that. Yeah, who knows? Who knows what it... My guess is some of the most extreme Trumpers that you look at and go, how can that even be real? Maybe isn't. Maybe it's not real. So all of this, as we look at the way this stuff works, all of this should, I hope, and, you know, I know I'm diverting here, but it fits. I don't want the screw tape letters meme anymore. I don't need to hear that. It's as if I'm concerned about systems being broken, that I'm being manipulated by Satan, because I'm so concerned about the exterior that I have no concern about the interior. I assure you, I am more concerned with my interior life than I am with anything externally. I promise you. So there's a bizarre judgment, which I'm okay with. I'm okay being judged because I say that. I mean, I'm going to judge a lot of stuff. You're going to hear me talk about it here. You're going to see it on Facebook. Yes, I'm going to look judgmentally because there has to be a degree of prudence. There has to be a degree of judgment put into any decision. Yes, I'm going to look at things very judgmentally because that's part of discernment. And so if as a result of that, I get the judgment back with the C.S. Lewis screw tape letters meme, so be it. But I will say this, C.S. Lewis is not looking at this from a standpoint of a mutual inclusiveness. Okay, he's trying to tell a story, and he's doing it in a sense that basically says, here's the problem. And I get what he's saying because I see this. I see this in people. I see this in individuals who have really no faith life, none whatsoever. But what they're trying to do is talk about the systems being broken and all of the things that are a challenge. I get where the meme comes from. But there's nothing wrong with a both-and approach that says, yeah, you know what? I am going to work on myself. Absolutely. And I'm well aware and I'm painfully aware of the struggles that I have. I get that. I'm working on them. But that has nothing to do with an avoidance of, or it certainly should not allow for an avoidance of the issues at hand, and especially the challenges that we face with broken systems. Our systems are broken. And if this is the kind of game we play on the left and right when it comes to manipulating each other's rallies, I mean, first off, it's childish and a real ridiculous use of resourcing, in my opinion. Just let the best man win. Who cares about this kind of garbage? And then if we're spending that kind of energy doing things of that nature that are that dishonest, what else are we going to do? So that's why I am looking at a third-party choice. You've heard me talk about Soraya Foss. I had hoped that was going to work. It turns out in Kentucky, where we are here with Breadbox Media's home base, there's no way I can vote for her because she's not even eligible for write-in status based on the filing that we have at this point. So off the table. So with that, I began looking for the next viable option. And then the Solidarity Party looked interesting to me. And then I discovered Evan McMillan and what he stands for and the track record that he has had as a public servant and a CIA agent, and the fact that he's a Mormon guy, and Mormons that every Mormon I know, Mitt Romney included, has tremendous value structure. And you look at the things he stands for, it's very centrist. Some is centrist left, some is centrist right. But I'm listening to this guy and reading his stuff thinking, we need this. We need this right now as a country. We need to find a way to fix these problems that we have with this. Either it's this or it's that. There is never a both and. And someone who could stand in the center to say, you know what? Yeah, it is some of that. Absolutely. You know what? And it is some of this. So let's find a way to come together in the center on this that allows us all to win, as opposed to this zero-sum win or lose, which happens generally in partisan politics because you've got two individuals disagreeing with someone so vehemently. What if not only in this election we turn the tide for this election, but we look at changing the way politics are done for future generations? That's what I'm talking about. It's a big opportunity. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
If you enjoy listening to the Leo Brown Almost Hour, consider becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you. You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Interesting op-ed piece in the New York Times regarding this incident with the tape from Donald Trump and where it's led us now to a discussion we've never really been having before. And I think it's important. We're going to talk about that and just how pervasive this really is. And it's not just rap music. Don't give me that. It's way, way more pervasive than that. We'll talk about that coming up in a moment. But first, I posted this on my Facebook page. It's, I think, timely. It's not a news item necessarily. It's just how things work, and we're talking about how Supreme Court decisions get overturned. And I think it's important to have this discussion, especially now when I hear so frequently that this next election is all about the Supreme Court. It's all about justices who will get in there, and they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. I can't count the times I've heard that. And Donald Trump has promised he'll put justices in who will overturn Roe v. Wade. And first off, that just can't be done. It doesn't work that way. You don't get a bench in and they all sit down and go, okay, so what? Let's look back over the past 200 years of court decisions and decide which ones we're going to change. It's not how it works. So I think it's important to understand that regardless of who's on the bench, there's a process to this, and it's not that easy as just simply saying, okay, well, we finally got the conservative majority we've been wanting, so now they can pick and choose and make changes. No. The rule, just as a lower court ruling stays if the Supreme Court never hears it, the same is true for Supreme Court decisions that are heard and decided. That old ruling stays until, and this is the only way, until there's a challenge that can then be set on the precedence of that prior decision being flimsy. And this is where, and in some cases, this will lead even to an amendment of the Constitution, because now the Constitution, the very constitutionality of this new situation, whatever it may be, has changed the dynamic. We've seen it when it comes to women voting. We've seen it when it comes to civil rights. There are times where something is so drastically culturally different that now a new amendment even has to be presented. So here's the thing. I don't care how conservative you are, and I've heard the criticism just today earlier in a Facebook conversation about Evan McMullen not caring about the Obergefell, I never know how to say it, the gay marriage decision. And he's like, we just got to move on. Well, we got to move on. If he said that, as apparently he did in this LifeSite News, and that's another, I no longer trust LifeSite News to be a news source. They are very shill in their, not shrill, they are a shill in the way they present things. And it's, I just don't trust them. I think they've got far too deep of an agenda, and that's okay. We all do, but just be honest about it, and don't call yourself news when it's not news. It's just activism. That's another thing to dig into. Nonetheless, if McMullen said this, which I have no reason to assume he didn't, it's because what's going to be tough. Here's what would have to happen. Please understand the path to changing gay marriage in this country because of what happened with that Supreme Court decision, with, by the way, with conservatively appointed justices making that decision, please understand, here's what you have, or what you would need to have. Some way, somehow, you would have to have a lower court decision that opposes that original Supreme Court decision differently enough that now oppositely, not just differently, in complete opposite fashion. So trying to think of an example that would even remotely come close to this. I'm trying to think of how could it even get challenged. I'm really trying to help you here. If this is where you want things to go, I'm trying to help you. It could be a situation where someone is, my goodness, I'm trying to think of how it could really even work, because this is the problem. This is probably why McMullen said, and we just got to move on from that, because you'd have to find a way that it's challenged to say that marriage can no longer be can no longer ever be viewed in any way, shape, or form as two members of the same sex. And it's going to be hard to challenge that. Now, you could, and this is where I was kind of thinking through this, you could challenge holy matrimony, right? But then now, and this is something I proposed, and there are those who have scoffed at this, but I proposed, let's look at really trying to differentiate this. Because there could be a Supreme Court justice ruling, a Supreme Court decision on holy matrimony versus marriage, with marriage being a state institution, holy matrimony being a church institution, and you kind of need both now anyway, right? You get a state marriage license, you get that as you get married in a church. You could technically just go get the marriage license, and you're going to be married in the eyes of the state, but you wouldn't be seen in the eyes of the church anyway. So it's already two separate things. Differentiating that and defining that might be something that would make people more comfortable. But here is what will not happen. This is a guarantee of whomever is in the White House. No justice, if the entire liberal contingent of the court all die in the next 4 years, and you've got Donald Trump as president, and he puts nothing but conservatively appointed justices on that, they can't go, okay, finally, now it's time to overturn Roe v. Wade. Just can't happen. What would have to happen is, and this is where I see it, the only potential, and you can argue this with me, and you can tell me, well, there are other ways, or there's an easier way, but this is how I see it happening. Personhood. Personhood Amendment is enacted in a state, one state. And someone then says, no, we got to challenge that. So you think about what happened in Texas, right? Look at what happened in Texas from the pro-life movement, where simply just raising the standards of the abortion businesses shut them down 90-some-odd percent. And then it got challenged, and it was taken to a lower court. It was taken to a district court that heard the case and ruled that this piece of legislation was unconstitutional. Then what happened? It tried to get pushed beyond the lower court to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said what? No, we're not going to touch it. Right? So that's the unfortunate reality of this as well. Will the Supreme Court even hear the case? So back to the whole, we're going to get justices that will overturn Roe. Well, you don't even know that the Supreme Court's going to get to hear the case anyway. You just don't know. So here's the thing. Here's how it could work, theoretically. But it has nothing to do with the Supreme Court. Quite honestly, it has zero to do with the conservative liberal makeup of the court, because this is what it has to boil down to, constitutionality. That's what the court is there to rule on. And as I've said before, look at the 2012 decision. Religious liberty at play. Unanimous decision. You almost have, I don't know what the record is of unanimous decisions, but they're not huge. They're not frequent. Total unanimity ruling in favor of religious liberty. So here's how it works. It's a couple of paths, but it has nothing to do with the justices. The paths could be. One, personhood amendment gets challenged. And as a result, it goes to court. And the amendment, the state amendment, is ruled unconstitutional because prevailing law of the land says there's abortion that is available, and this would essentially make a prior precedent a problem. Now, if that went before the court, which I think they would have to at that point, because it's a strong enough precedent that it's like, yeah, this is going in a totally different direction. We got to rule. If they ruled, and they ruled in favor of the personhood, it would nullify Roe v. Wade. That decision would no longer be valid. because now you can't have access to abortion anywhere, anytime, anyhow, because abortions are in direct violation of the constitutionality of personhood. That could happen. That could happen. The other case is that a religious liberty issue is presented some way, somehow, that, and this would, this one's a little trickier if you ask me, that it would be against someone, because, I mean, you know, we have right to work and anyone can work anywhere, but let's just say it's a abortion worker who says my liberties were violated because I had to participate in this particular situation, challenges, gets their rules in favor of religious liberty, but it's still probably not going to overturn Roe. The personhood seems to be the best route. Thanks for thinking through all that with me, but it's not as easy as I think we think it is. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Thanks to Timothy Putnam, host of Outside the Walls, a weekend show here at Breadbox Media. On his Facebook post, found the video, went back and grabbed the source of that and posted it for my question of, how is what Donald Trump is saying in this video any different than what Hillary Clinton stands for when it comes to abortion? Because he's saying it's traditional liberal language. Listen to what he's saying. He's not saying, yes, abortion is murder. Yes, it needs to be stopped. This is not what he's saying. This is not even remotely, that's pro-life rhetoric. That's what you hear pro-lifers say. Yes, abortion is murder. Any case, any time, any place. No exceptions. That's pro-life language. What you hear him saying is, well, no, there are caveats. It's got to be these three, rape, incest, life of the mother. He does say life and not health, which is a little bit different rhetoric. But then when pressed, so would you say in there's a situation where abortion is murder? No, no, it all depends on when. Okay. What? And this is the guy who's going to turn the tide, finally, in America, to a pro-life nation. You're getting fooled. You're really, really, really getting the wool pulled over your eyes. Please understand. That's not the language of a pro-life leader. I've been in the pro-life community for a dozen or more years. I know what pro-life language sounds like. And when someone's trying to weasel out of something because of their convictions not being in line, what you hear there, I think Tim Kaine could have answered it better. Quite frankly, could have answered it more eloquently in a way that we would have said, oh, okay, because, you know, he's going to say things like, well, I tell you this, I do not want abortion funding outside of these United States, which is in line with the Hyde Amendment, which he supports. He's going to say things that sound much more pro-life than what you heard there. So again, on my Facebook page, take a look at that. I'm asking the question, how is this different? How is this different from Hillary Clinton? What exactly are you hearing here, and how can you be convinced that what Trump is saying differentiates? Nonetheless, wanted to talk about this unforeseen, the beautiful op-ed piece in the New York Times. This is on my Facebook page, and the dialogue that we're having now about issues that I don't think we have had as a nation really on this level until now. And we've had a lot of these things come up. We've had the allegations against Bill Cosby recently. We've had rape, the rape culture in the forefront from certainly Brock Turner and other similar cases, but we haven't necessarily been looking, I think, as critically as we have since this interesting video with the audio on the bus emerged with Trump saying what he said, to the point where we're really looking with significant scrutiny at just about everything and the way women are victimized. I think it's very interesting. And in this op-ed piece, the thing that stuck out that I extracted, even in the beloved one-time Broadway musical, then 1980, when was it exactly? 84, 82, forgive me for not knowing the exact year, 80, 19, some early 80s, somewhere prior to 84, maybe 80, 81, 82. The movie, stage play in the 70s, movie in the 80s, iconic nonetheless. Slice of Americana for many. I think if you really look at the subject matter, abortion is even dealt with in this movie and stage play. But the lyric in the opening Summer Nights song, whatever, I guess it's the opener, I don't know, it's when they're all kind of coming back to school and singing the song about what happened over the summer. Tell me more, did she put up a fight? And it's predation that is assumed, because this is the way things get done, I guess, with boys and girls. And I'm hoping that this is a wake-up call. Not the Greece thing, necessarily, but the Trump thing. I hope it's a wake-up call for us to really start having serious conversations about where the lines truly need to be drawn, where those lines need to never be crossed. And I hope it's a conversation that we can have with our sons and daughters to the point of saying, let's realize where we respect each other. And let's realize that there's never a place for predation. And you know, I realize courtship is a chase. I realize that. I know there's a game to the courtship, and that game can even continue on into marriage, where there's a bit of a cat and mouse. But that in respect of one another, to the point of truly identifying the boundaries and respecting those boundaries, that is something that's a conversation that we all have to have and we have to understand. But I think it's unfair, because the one thing I've seen, I've got very little play to this, because I promise you, if it had been a rap video that I posted and said, oh, look at this, you know, we would see, oh yeah, Leo, yeah, you're right, look, that music perpetuates this unfortunate narrative, and look what's happening. But, you know, it's Greece, which, again, I guess we think is some kind of wholesome apple pie sort of presentation of American teen life. It's not. I think we've forgotten. It's been a long time since you saw it. Maybe you were a teenager when you saw it, and you thought, isn't this nice? But it's everywhere. It's so pervasive that we don't even hear it. I had to see that lyric written for me to go, oh my goodness, wow. Yeah, right there. And I think if we're more aware now, which I hope, if nothing else, this incident has brought this awareness to the forefront, we're going to see this way, way, way more frequently. We're going to see it in so many different places. It's like the old caveman cartoon that was popular in the 70s, 60s, maybe. I think we even saw it. I'm trying to recall if we saw it even in a Looney Tune depiction. I'm sure we did, because this was out there with the woman being dragged by her hair. That comes to mind when I think about this this horrible issue of predation. And we've just accepted it. It is part of our culture. So let's have those conversations. Let's look a little bit more critically. Let's be very, let's even self-edit as much as we can and stop and go, am I inadvertently playing into that? Am I doing something that could be misconstrued or interpreted as advocating for something of that nature or participating in that type of language? I've been very critical of this locker room talk garbage, and I've said many times that I've told friends I don't want to hear their stuff. I've told them that. I don't want to hear that. I don't need to hear that. That's on the golf course. Men will be men, like I say. I've spent a lot of time in locker rooms. I never played sports, organized sports, and golfers. Even in the team in high school, we didn't go and shower together. That's what we did. On the course. And keep our clothes on. We never saw each other naked. We never went over that quite close. So I think that this really is an opportunity. That's what we have to make out of these unfortunate situations. We have to look at them very critically, and we've got to say, wait a minute, where's the opportunity here? How do we see this differently? Which is another reason why I'm putting my support behind McMullen and looking at this as a real opportunity to see something different, because it's not just about this election to me. It's not about this is a way to maybe thwart this Trump train, whatever. I honestly, whoever wins, it's going to be the same politics. It's going to be the same us against them. It's going to be the same right and left. It's going to be the same polarization. And it's not time to go to the extreme with Bernieism or with Tea Partyism, the extreme further poles of these two movements. It's time to move toward the center and to really go, okay, you know, there are some issues that can't be categorized as Republican or Democrat. They simply can't. Not really. Not when you look at what needs to be seen here. So let's find a way of looking at it differently, identifying it differently, discussing it differently, and addressing it differently. That's what I want to see from this election, with a viable third-party candidate who can do this for years to come. That's all we have time for. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.